district knows what they're to do with their regulation of the flow down to the ranchers in the valley.
1948, the year that we had the big flood here and down the Columbia River, we had 870 inches of snowfall here in Holden. That compared with about 270 inches this last year. So that helped provide the water for that flood.
The snow depth is not the only thing that counts. You recognize that, but what we're really interested in is how much water's up there. And that, because snow can have a lot of density or can have very little density, depending upon how much rain has fallen on it and the pattern of the storms and so on. So that's what that does, yes.
Before I go on, I had a question. I was wondering how much of an impact people such as Ansel Adams had with his photography of Yosemite. Did this influence some of this that came about?
Well, I'm not up on that. I just know that he's a very good photographer and dramatic, and a photographer is, through his art form, is able to portray a view of...
Maybe more people who couldn't have personally seen it at that time.
Yeah. It's one of the... Go ahead.
No, well, that's it.
The early painters also influenced people in the East. The Cole and Bierstadt and...
Oh, yeah.
Moran, that painted these wonderful pictures in the West.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Molly?
I don't remember, couldn't see who asked about women in the Forest Service, but it's changed so much since we were entering. And not only are they in leadership, but there's women fighting fires now and carrying heavy axes and doing trail maintenance. And there's no limit to it.
The point is, the women, Molly was saying, and then before that, the art, the artwork of the West convinced the East of its value. And I think that is... what we're talking about here. It has a lot to do with it. People can't appreciate these things unless they can see them.
I was interested in your comments relating by women to the Forest Service. I think it's back in 1941, I took a course there in Michigan on labor relations. I took it out of curiosity, what is labor relations? But one day Walter Ruther came in to talk to the class. Mm-hmm. At that time, he was the vice president of the United Auto Workers. He later became president, but he was just the vice president then. And I remember one of the students asking him how the unions were becoming successful. What were they doing to become successful? Because the union movement was becoming a big factor. And he said, well, we learned if you wanted to get anything done, you got women and children involved. I think it's taken industry and business a long time to realize you've got women involved and things seem to get done.
Well, the Forest Service has a history. In that film, it showed the ranger and the assistant ranger. What you didn't see was the district clerk, who was normally a woman, who was a woman typically, and they couldn't have run anything without her.
Well, there were women on forest lookout stations back...
primarily.
Way back when.
Yes, they temperamentally were suited to that because most men couldn't hack it. I mean, they couldn't cut it. They couldn't cut it. And when we were... Molly and I were in the Forest Service, we first, in Northern California, in Mount Shasta, into our home, we had... the Forest Service, I just go into this, is that the Forest Service was a part of rural America in the West. The Forest Ranger, the Forest Service provided communications, phone system, through the landline. Everybody picks it up. You know, it was three longs for you, but... And anyway, that linked everything. And rangers would ride and put the phone line up in the spring and to the lookouts and all of that. And they provided that. They provided road maintenance, provided law enforcement, and the forest ranger was an integral part of the community in the West, in small towns. And politically, that's where they got a lot of clout because of that. But it's interesting how that community identification is a part of the West, And the Rangers have backed out of that now, of course. They've provided fire protection as well. But many of the services that we have in towns today were provided by the Forest Service in conjunction with volunteers working with them. Yes.
Are horses still used?
Though? Horses? Mm-hmm. Yes, we still use horses in wilderness work. Horses and mules. But pack horses, we don't, we ride for show today. A lot of Forest Service people take out congressmen and their aides on pack trips. That's when we use them the most. that's what really goes on. And they go back there and they have big steaks, like that one in the picture. Yeah. And the ranger that can cook the best steaks, he gets, you know, favor treatment. It's a factor in promotion, yes. I'm sorry?
That film should be updated to fit the younger generation.
That film, she's saying, should be updated to fit today's younger generation.
I don't know about that. I think it's good to have that early history on
they,
film.
They need to, but so many of them snicker at us when we were younger. And that's entertaining. I like for them to pinpoint it right at them. But they need to see that, too. But then...
The environmental movement.
What we need to do to preserve this wonderful God-given land.
Mm-hmm. But how would you update it? How would you want, in place of that, someone patrolling from a helicopter or a plane instead of a horse?
Just horseback.
Well,
well, it's different today, but yes.
What are the requirements to go in as a ranger?
Well. It's in, they, you showed you walking down the stairs there after with their cap and gown on. Mm-hmm. A forest ranger is a graduate in forestry. He has to have certain college courses for civil service requirement. And then today you'd have to be a woman.
Oh!
With a forestry degree. Because it's just about close. I mean, there's very little opportunity for men because we're trying to achieve equal opportunity. And it'd be better if you were Asian or black or, you know, some minority.
Yeah, a minority woman.
Minority woman. You got a clear shot at it there. But that's those are social goals that we have today that we didn't have back then. We had lookouts and we had clerks. But in Gifford Pinchot's day and in the early Forest Service, in the Washington office, it was an organization that was, and it still is, everybody calls everybody by their first name, no matter what their rank. I mean, you don't have this military looking down at the lower levels or whatnot. The technician is has high status, just as much status as anybody. If the chief of the Forest Service comes out, they just kind of absorb him as one of the crew. And so it's that way. And everybody called everybody by their first name. And all the women called the men Mr. So-and-so. That was just the way it was. And so in Pinchot, what he did was kind of clever, how he established the Forest Service his way. He was over in France and studied forestry. He wanted to learn about the working forest, and he did that. Came back here, and he was politically active in establishing the National Forest. And then the way he thought he would get his way of managing, he created a school of forestry at Yale. And that was the first school of forestry in the United States. It was at Yale. And he got that curriculum going his way. And then the graduates of Yale, they went out and they formed forestry schools all over the United States. In every, the western states, Idaho, Iowa State, Michigan State, University of Michigan, Minnesota, Cal Berkeley, so on. University of Washington.
Illinois.
But these people that graduated from Yale went out and spread the Pinchot story or the Forest Service way. And Forest Service, that word, Forest Service, he got that in there. He saw that if it wasn't service, that meant use and that meant helping people in the community. That meant serving the needs of the settler. It had to work. If it didn't look good, if it didn't feel good, it wouldn't work. And so he was a real proponent of helping, serving, providing needs of people.
Ahead of his time.
Ahead of his time. And he spread that out. He imbued that in the people that worked for the agency. And they followed him like he, they would just go over anything for him. And he really had this forestry concept spread, and it's still in the Forest Service. And the people that are in it are people who believe in those things. And like, I could go on with that, but anyway, you get the point.
Jim, are the Forest Service people in their training, do they get specialization like naturalists? Or are they all pretty well-rounded?
Well, today, it's Forest Service is made up of engineers, landscape architects, soil scientists, meteorologists, all kinds of ologists, specialists, all working. It still has a lot of, the forester is kind of getting, has been getting the favored jobs, but it's interesting how engineers are now at the top. The previous chief of the Forest Service was an engineer. And we have a lot of people that had come from other specialties. Now landscape architects are forest supervisors and regional foresters. So we, it's changing. But this spirit is still carried on. And it's like the Disney organization, Walt Disney, they carry on the spirit of Walt. They try. And they have a Disney Institute that, you know, imbues these characteristics. Yeah. You had a somebody here. Okay. But anyway, these the agency, the Forest Service is part of the West, the government of the rural West, strong leadership, popular. Very popular people. The Forest Service, service to citizens, it played well in D.C., in Washington, D.C., because as you can imagine, when a congressman comes back to his district and talks to his constituents, and somebody just out of the blue says, hey, this ranger here, somebody from the local chamber of commerce says, well, this ranger here is great. They never hear that about any public employee, anywhere. All they hear is, oh, well, you know, this agency's bureaucratic and all of that. But real people that work with their constituents carries a lot of clout. And I was back in D.C. And I talked to people, congressmen, and they say, the Forest Service, where we know, we discount what's in the newspaper, but we believe our constituents. And our constituents tell us about forest rangers who fix their flat tire or something like that. That's the kind of thing that really makes a difference in how the agency gets credibility. But the National Park Service is equally a fine organization. Competitive, the two agencies compete, but probably, but definitely for the benefit of the people of the United States. There's competition there. Forest Service, and I think they're highly motivated and highly skilled people, good agencies. Park Service is better at telling their story than the Forest Service in the media. Forest Service is really weak at that, in making their point. Trying to pick up on that, but pretty clumsy. The Forest Service is a smug agency. Kind of, we know we're good. Like the Boston Celtics or San Francisco 49ers or something like that, we know we're good. You don't have to tell us. But it's smugness, but it's not arrogant. If you can, the Forest Service is so smug that they go in there and write their own legislation and hand it to the congressman. I mean, it's kind of, or did do that for a long time. That's what they, because they had such a strong power base rurally, historically. It's associated closely with rural people, with rural values, not a bureaucracy, and a can-do attitude. It was based on Pinchot's philosophy, or not a philosophy, but a precept, that if you have people in an organization and they all have various skills, that group of people can do anything if they work together. And that's a precept of the agency. That, well, I don't care what it is, just give it to us, we can do it. And that's been kind of a disaster to my point of view. We can do anything, just give us more work and don't give us any more people or anything to work with. So I don't know, but that doesn't stop the Forest Service. They just kind of keep on keeping on. But I just wanted to give you that, the flavor.
We ought to get some people from the Forest Department into Congress.
Into Congress?
Yeah.
They wouldn't fit in.
How about your appropriations? Have they kept step with what you do? And
well, there's
the number of people involved.
The Forest Service is funded very well for its timber harvest, but not funded very well for its other resource. Yeah. And that's Congress, and that's lobbying pressure, and that's your Western representatives that bring that about, and the Forest Service moves in the direction of the money. In other words, money determines policy. That's the insider's point of view. That's what you're getting from the forest ranger. You wouldn't get that from your congressman, but I don't think, maybe you would, but today they're pretty open.
Do you have a minute for a story, Jim?
A story? Mm-hmm. I'm through here in 10 minutes and I haven't got halfway through here. But maybe tomorrow, save it. The Forest Service and the Park Service, I just want to talk a little bit. These two men disagreed and they had their worst disagreement over Hetch Hetchy Reservoir and Yosemite National Park. And Gifford Pinchot, he wanted the reservoir, and Stephen Mather was against it, and the reservoir was built. And you can kind of see the two ideas of serving those irrigation crops in the Central Valley would be, oh, wonderful to Pinchot. And to Mather, it was a disaster. And that's where the two really, that was one watershed event that really caused.
Pinchot lost every fight but the last one on that.
What's that?
Pinchot lost every fight on that subject except the last one.
Yeah, he was master at that. It went in getting his way, I guess. He was not necessarily, he wasn't a prince, let's just say that. He had his flaws as well, but a powerful man's man. And persuasive, user of words, and so on. Another thing I want to give you perspective on, foresters are trained in forestry in the Forest Service. In the National Park Service, there are usually people who are naturalists and trained in geology, botany, and those kinds of specialties, but not in management of forests and the dynamics of forests and stands.
And this is why Yellowstone was allowed to burn, right?
That's a Latter-day story.
I had to get that in.
I wondered when somebody'd bring that up.
Yeah, we can get into that. But anyway, politicians, it's been popular lately in the West to create national parks because it stimulates tourism. A national park has higher status than a national forest because, you know, you've got Yellowstone and Yosemite and those attract a lot of visitors. Well, Chamber of Commerce people would like to have a park in their state and or in their locale to attract more visitors. And so politicians talk to Chamber of Commerce people and they say, create us a park. So they just carve one out of the National Forest and that really makes the Forest Service mad at the Park Service. Because that's a law, that's a win-lose, and we lose. And the Park Service, they really don't like it that much either. And then you figure out why the Park Service wouldn't like to have another park added. Cost more money to run the park. Do you think they get any more money to do it?
No.
Probably not. There's a budget, you know, split it up. Why not just make it do? You heard that one before. So the parks kind of all deteriorate that a little bit more. So the National Park Service isn't altogether happy with that either, unless they get some of the Forest Service's money with it, which they don't. Because the Forest Service gets money for timber management, and they make parks out of areas that don't have much timber in them anyway. Or we weren't cutting any timber in those areas anyway. Like Olympic National Park was carved out. The Tetons were carved out. Crater Lake, almost all of it.
Northern Cascade.
Northern Cascade is really a historic point. Yeah. But anyway, that's some of the... The Forest Service really is... Control has been controlled by the timber industry lobbies. Not because we like them, but because one thing, the timber industry greed for more timber, I call it. You know, and well, it's kind of, that's the way you play the game in business, is get everything you can for yourself and keep piling it up, you know. And you need timber to keep those mills running, and you need good sawlogs to maintain that mill production. When you've got a mill that handles logs this big and you're out of them on the private land, you guess where you're going to get them so you can extend the life of your mill. So anyway, but the Forest Service has been kind of part of that, and I'd have to say that we bought into all of that and we caught up in it because we got a lot of praise for cutting this timber and providing jobs and all these good things. But the timber industry is also good for another thing for the Forest Service, and that is to stopping parks. that's an insider's point of view.
Parks stop the timber industry too.
It stops, well, I'm just saying that decreases our influence. We like to think that these forest ranger says, national forest person who's been raised in this mindset, these are our forests. They're for the public. And we've been taking care of them for the public. We do it better than anybody else. Why would you want to turn it over to anybody else when we're the best? And we still believe we're the best land management agency in the world. And nobody can prove us wrong. We could have kept this North Cascades National Park if it hadn't been for the mossbacks in our organization that wouldn't accept wilderness status for this place. It really frosts us no end. But we wouldn't listen. We were bought in. We bought the timber industry. We were right in with them. And we lost it to the Park Service because the Western senators and congressmen said, the people don't want it that way. The public... You're not listening to the public Forest Service, and we weren't.
Sierra Club?
Well, all kinds of people. Sierra Club was one, but just the people. The people of the Northwest became more urban-oriented. And that's the story. The second confrontation in the West is the public lands. Now that are public lands, then now the confrontation is, what use are you going to put to these public lands? And that battle's going on every day, and it's not settled. The urban point of view. If the Forest Service got all of the rural congressmen on their side, they'd be beat 20-1. Because the United States is an urban society today, and our grassroots support isn't cutting it anymore. But we're trying to. And the Forest Service is really trying to get in tune with the urban customer. And that's hard for us to do. We're having a terrible time with it. And that's what we're trying to do. They're saying, we want more recreation on the National Forest. And we're saying, okay, here it is. And they're saying, but we don't like what you're doing. we don't like, it doesn't look good. We don't like that timber cutting. It looks terrible. And if Gifford Pinchot were around today, he'd say, well, do what you have to do to get it accepted. And that's kind of the message. And what I'm saying, there's not enough timber to go around, folks, to maintain all these mills we've got. It's going to come down. It's not there because, yes, ma'am.
Why are they shipping all those logs to Japan then?
Well, that's coming off private land. There's a federal law that says you cannot export national forest timber.
Right.
And we don't. But what they do is they buy our timber so they can send, you know, then they'll send the private.
It's true.
Yeah. It, you know, you grab on it here and it squirts out over here.
Isn't it time loggers and timber industry found themselves a new job?
Well, it's not that easy because when you reduce the timber harvest in the West, in Oregon, we have been living off the receipts. The federal treasury gets money, and also a percentage of that timber, those timber receipts, which is a lot of money, goes back to those counties where it was cut. And they support schools, roads, and local government with that money. If we cut, if we reduce that, that's one of the big issues, and we lose jobs. The mill jobs that are produced with that raw material. You see, that's the politician's problem. You've got all these people saying, protect, stop that cutting in the national forest. Well, I want my job. Well, when it comes right down to it, when he goes back to talk to his constituents, he can't talk against jobs. That doesn't play very well. So that's where, see, it's not so easy when you see it from his point of view. He's got to take care of, he wants to get reelected is his objective. And he can't get reelected, probably. He doesn't think he can if he doesn't come up with more.
We're surrounded by signs that say, we support the timber industry, and I feel they want some more of the wilderness. Okay, in a few years they'll want a little more of the wilderness, and a bit later they'll want still more of the wilderness. Why don't they start now learning another job? When my job as a teacher in a rural school ran out, I became a librarian. Let them do something different.
Yeah, well, the thing is that when they, the jobs, the mill jobs, the mill worker spends money so that the school teacher can get paid, so that the librarian can get paid, so that, and so, you see, there's no, that's where it all starts from, is the resource. Yeah. But it's 10:31 and I have to quit. We'll be back tomorrow.